I am doing this podcast sitting in my truck, parked outside the laundromat, waiting for the laundry to finish. So it looks like I'm talking on my phone, but whoever passes me by, they will think I'm talking on the phone, but I'm really talking to myself and talking to you in a way, all like three of you listening to this. So anyway, this podcast is about George A. Romero, who recently died of lung cancer at 77, and I found out about his death. I was kayaking on the Delaware River Gap somewhere, I think in Pennsylvania or New Jersey. I don't know. By that time of day, I was just like, oh, I was so tired, and I was out of it. And I made a new rule that any activity like that, whether it's hiking, kayaking, or anything similar, with the exception of whitewater rafting, I will only do it for an hour and then stop. This was like 4 or 5 hours. So anyway, my brother texted me the LA Times, I think it was the LA Times article about Romero dying, and I said, oh no, and that was my response. But I wasn't exactly, I mean, I was surprised, but I wasn't shocked, because with a lot of interviews I saw of him, he always had a cigarette. Like, I always thought of Romero as a guy who was just smoking a cigarette all the time. And this is before I found out he died of lung cancer. And, you know, I kind of predicted that, oh, it must have been lung cancer. But still, it's definitely depressing. And there's been a ton of articles about him. And what sucks is that, you know, I wish there were articles praising him when he was alive. Because it seems like aside from the, he had a very loyal and cult following, but in the mainstream Hollywood and mainstream entertainment, this was a guy who didn't really get everything he deserved. It just seemed his career was such a struggle, and it should not have been a struggle based on the impact that his work has had and continues to have. So I'm going to talk about mostly the his first three Dead movies, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. And I'll first talk about how I got to get into these movies and know George A. Romero. And that begins, I think I was in fourth grade, and my parents had a Betamax. Now, for those who don't know, a Betamax was a VCR. And for those who don't know, a VCR was this device where you recorded things, but instead of using your TV with your DVR, you would use a tape. And by tape, it was a literal tape. So, and you would stick the tape in, and you would press record, and it would do it in an analog way. So my parents had a Betamax, and I lived next door to my uncle and aunt, and my uncle recorded Night of the Living Dead. I think it was on TNT. I think it was on TNT, and back then, in the 80s, was it TNT? Yeah, it was one of Turner's first networks, so maybe it was TNT. Anyway, Ted Turner was notorious back in the 80s for colorizing black and white movies. So I first saw Night of the Living Dead. It was billed as Night of the Living Dead in unliving color. So when I first saw this movie, it was in color, and I had no idea this movie was originally in black and white. Again, I was, you know, a little kid when I watched this. So I was always drawn and fascinated to horror movies, and fascinated to things that scared me, even though I didn't like being scared. I was always drawn to it, because maybe in a way it was for me to, in a safe way for me to face my fears. From getting the crap scared out of me by the Wicked Witch of the West during The Wizard of Oz, to Medusa in Clash of the Titans, to watching Evil Dead for the first time when I was like 7 years old. Just things that a kid these days would not be doing. For better or for worse, I personally think it's for better. But I watched Night of the Living Dead, which was the first of his zombie movies, and that was the first movie I saw. And I watched it in unliving color, and each time it went to commercial, It was, we'll be back with Night of the Living Dead in unliving color. And I watched it. And then the next day, I watched it again. And the next day, I watched it again. And I must have watched Night of the Living Dead every single day. For like, it's, I don't know for sure, but it seemed like a year, you know. And I was like, I was in fourth grade. I was very young, and I watched this movie every single day. I was just, I was fascinated by, I think, the look of it, the grainy look of it, the way that, like, the music was, like, it sounded like it was on, like, a weird record player. Like, it had a warmth, but that warmth made it scary. Scarier. So I watched this over and over and over again, and then I found out later on that there was a black and white version. Now, after the Betamax, we got VHS. Now, VHS was the VCR after Betamax. So once we got VHS, I bought the tape. Now, unbeknownst to me back then, because I was a little kid, George Romero, and this is what makes a lot of his career tragic, Night of the Living Dead had such a gigantic impact. It was made for basically no money, and it made a ton of money, just in relative to its budget. It's like probably one of the most successful movies ever made. But the problem was that George Romero did not copyright the movie, so the copyright ran out and it became public domain. So until to this day, Romero never made any money on Night of the Living Dead because he didn't copyright it. So people were able to sell this and play this and not give Romero the royalties he deserves, which is horrible. So I probably bought one of these VHS tapes, and none of the money went to Romero. Well, I didn't buy it. My parents bought it. I was way too young to buy it. So I got it on VHS, and I watched it. And this is when we just got the VHS player, and the way I remember being able to fast forward with remote control, because the Betamax didn't have remote control. So I watched the movie and I was fascinated that it was in black and white. And then because of the fast forward feature, which I never saw before, I hit the rewind button and I watched the movie in reverse with no sound. So I would watch the movie forwards and I would watch the movie backwards fast with no sound. So Night of the Living Dead affected me as a kid because it was just, you know, watching people in this extreme situation and the zombies coming after them and how they deal with zombies. And I felt so much better as a little kid seeing the, oh, spoiler alert, all these movies are going to be spoiled. So seeing the rescue team kill all the zombies because Daybreak broke at the end, and then tragically Ben, the main character, was killed. So as a kid, I was like, oh, what a bummer, the main character was killed. I don't think I said bummer because I don't think I was that much of a hippie when I was a kid. But but watching it as an adult now, and this is what's so great about Romero and his work, especially these Dead movies, was that not only can you enjoy it on the level of, wow, this is scary, and look at the zombies, and the zombies are being killed, and the people are killing each other, and the people are fighting, there was underlying social messages in each movie. And Night of the Living Dead, and this is how Romero told it, they had a basic script, and they were auditioning actors, and they cast Dwayne Jones, who's a black guy, not because he was black, but because he was the best actor that they had, the best actor who they auditioned. And because they cast a black actor, they started to change the script around. This was 1968, a very watershed moment in history in the era of civil rights. Martin Luther King Jr. was either assassinated, or it might have been being made around when he was assassinated. I'm not sure, but you know, there was a lot of tension. There still is a lot of tension with civil rights, but nothing compared to what it was like in 1967, 1968. So that was going on, and when the movie was released, and you see a white mob kill a black hero. Now, granted, the white mob didn't know that Ben wasn't a zombie, but the fact that you saw this, and then at the end, it was still pictures of him being dragged on meat hooks. It's a very striking image. And also, this was a movie where the black guy who was the main character, he wasn't a servant. You know, he wasn't a sidekick. He wasn't somebody's butler. This was a guy who took charge And Ben was the guy who gave the orders. And Dwayne Jones, who played Ben, just had such a commanding presence in the movie. And, you know, as a little kid, I didn't realize the civil rights implications. And then sometimes even watching it as an adult now, I don't necessarily think, oh, this is the black guy taking charge. I'm thinking, oh, this is just the personality of the character. But, you know, that just might be my privilege talking. But sometimes I forget that. But for the most part, I can watch this movie now with that knowledge, because I am an adult. So with that knowledge of history and with that underlying social message is what makes the movie timeless. I do think, looking back, maybe Barbara as a woman character, you know, maybe a little bit less of a damsel in distress, but then Judy took command of things, and then the mother, Harry Cooper's wife, was kind of demanding as well. So I guess that made up for Barbara being in a catatonic state. I met Judith O'Day at a horror convention who played Barbara, and she was just so nice. We didn't even buy anything from her, and she was probably so annoyed, but we just talked to her for like maybe a half hour. But so I told the story to John Russo, who co-wrote Night of the Living Dead with George A. Romero, and I told him, I said, my first exposure to Night of the Living Dead was in color, and I think it was him, and it might have been Bill Hinesman, who played the very first zombie scene in Night of the Living Dead, and they just both groaned at me, and they went, ah, how could you? I said, I didn't know, I was a little kid, but just being able to watch this movie on such a different level. And I'm going to check my laundry right now, but I'll be back to discuss Dawn of the Dead. My laundry is still going. It's halfway done. And I wouldn't be surprised if George A. Romero directed like some kind of laundry detergent commercial, because when he was first starting out in Pennsylvania, he directed these commercials just to make money for his production company called Leighton Image. So there you go. It's a nice fun fact. Anyway, so moving on to Dawn of the Dead. So I watched Night of the Living Dead a billion times, and I would decorate, in fifth grade, I remember this, I would decorate my folder for my schoolwork with the Night of the Living Dead logo. It was Night of the Living Dead logo in one section, and it was the symbol for V, the miniseries V starring Mark Singer. I would draw the alien symbols on V. Now, little did I know the alien symbols in V were like kind of replicas of swastikas, but I didn't know that. I just thought the alien symbol was cool. I would never draw that now. But I was a little kid, so who knows? So, and I used to draw the V because I rooted for the resistance. I didn't root for the aliens. I usually root for good guys in movies. So I would draw the V, I would draw the alien symbol, but I would draw Night of the Living Dead on my book. So years later, I was at a friend's house. This might have been in junior high, and I discovered Dawn of the Dead, which was a sequel to Night of the Living Dead. So when I say sequel, it wasn't it didn't have any of the original characters or any characters in Night of the Living Dead, and it didn't mention Night of the Living Dead at all. So Dawn of the Dead starts where there's still a civilization, but it's just starting to fall apart. And, you know, but there are still, you know, transportation, people are flying and driving around, but there's law and order is really starting to erode. And it begins at a TV station, and there's people shouting and having a debate how to deal with this problem. It's an emergency broadcast network. And as a nod to the original Night of the Living Dead with rescue stations, they're trying to broadcast the rescue stations, but the rescue stations are shut down, and there's a guy yelling that, well, if we don't broadcast these rescue stations, people are going to tune out, and the guy was looking at ratings. So, I mean, when I first watched this movie, I watched it just like Night of the Living Dead on a level of, wow, this is gory, and look at all the zombies, but, like, watching it now, and I watched it maybe close to 6 months ago, I watched it on the level as more as of an adult, and I'm noticing the political meaning and the different social message in that. So right off the bat, Romero is probably talking about how, you know, TV channels aren't necessarily looking for out for the best interests of people. They're looking at ratings and who gets the highest ratings. And you see that these days in America with, you know, the 24-hour news networks, where it can be used as a force for good. It can be used to broadcast so many different types of news because there are so many hours in a day to fill. But meanwhile, it's one goddamn story. They focus on one story for like 8 hours and you never necessarily learn anything new, and they harp on one story and that's it, and it's because of ratings. It's not because of getting information, it's because of ratings. And Romero saw that. He saw that even in the 70s, and that's one of the ways that made Dawn of the Dead such a pioneering movie. So, talking about social message, and let me talk about the characters briefly too. Again, we have a lead who's a black man, Ken Foray, in an awesome performance. And Ken Foray in most of, in, you know, all the performances I've seen of him, especially in Devil's Rejects, was always so good. And I met him too at a horror convention. Very, very nice guy. And so you had a black guy in the lead, and then you had a woman, but unlike Barbara, this woman, Fran, I'm forgetting her name. Galen Ross. Galen Ross played Fran. She started out as kind of not knowing what to do and a little bit of a damsel in distress, but then she came out into her own and she started to take charge and started to demand things and became a hero of the movie at the end, because if it wasn't for her coming out with the idea of learning how to fly, they would really be dead, because nobody would be able to fly the helicopter. So, once again, very pioneering in the role of women in movies. So it's not just, and Dawn of the Dead was a gore fest, an absolute gore fest, but it wasn't just a gore fest. The social messages were there. The main social message in Dawn of the Dead was about consumerism. Now, it is no coincidence that this movie took place in a mall, and there are zombies trying to get into the mall. Zombies in a mall. Consumerism. Consumerism makes you a thoughtless zombie. This is the message that Romero was trying to convey, and he conveyed it so well with the characters, with the writing, and even with the violence, and even with the storyline. I mean, the riot at the end of the movie was because people wanted stuff. The stuff had no value anymore because civilization was falling apart, but people wanted it anyway. And then it showed the main characters locked in the mall, how even though they were safe, they had all they could want. They had so much food. They had video games. They had guns. They had running water because it was a nuclear generator. They had everything at their disposal, and they were slowly going crazy because they were isolated. They were isolated from everything, because they just wanted to survive. But was surviving enough? So that's the great social message for Dawn of the Dead. Now, Dawn of the Dead, I probably watched even more than Night of the Living Dead, probably because it was in color, the effects were better, the violence and the gore was more realistic, even though looking at it now, the zombies are kind of blue and the blood's a little too red. But it didn't matter. It was more slick. It was higher tech. It was more modern than Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead, it had some, you know, just because it's on a shoestring budget, it had some cheesy aspects to it. Not that much, but, you know, when Ben and Harry fought, like, you know, Ben missed by a mile, and, you know, not too many things, but yeah, a little cheesiness, but not that much. But Dawn of the Dead up the ante for it. And I believe Romero at least made good money on Dawn of the Dead. And I strongly suggest people read Roger Ebert's review of Dawn of the Dead, because he gave it 4 stars. And when I was a kid, I used to have Roger Ebert's, you know, back when people bought books and before the internet, I bought Roger Ebert's, like, movie companion or whatever it was called, and it was just him reviewing a bunch of movies in his book, and I must have read that Dawn of the Dead review 1,000 times. He gave it 4 stars, and just the way that he wrote and the way that he described it was better than what I can ever do. So, and I remember as a kid, I watched Dawn of the Dead so much that my mom was starting to get worried. And my mom's kind of a worrywart, and she would go, "I just want to make sure that you don't think any of this is real." Because she must have been concerned that I watched it so much that I would think that, oh, I have to get a gun because I think zombies are going to come and get me. And, you know, I must have been around 12 at the time. And yeah, I knew that, you know, but my mom was just erring on the side of caution, I guess. So I made a deal with my mom. I told her, I said, I will not watch a horror movie, because I was watching a lot of horror movies at that point, and I was subscribing to Fangoria. Not subscribing, I was buying Fangoria, reading horror comics. I told her, I said, I will not watch another horror movie for 6 months. And my mom said, wow, really? I said, yeah, I'm not going to do it. Of course, when I was at friends' houses, we would watch horror movies. But I didn't watch any horror movies in the house, and I kept telling her, after that 6 months is up, I'm going to buy Dawn of the Dead. And when that 6 months was up, I bought Dawn of the Dead on VHS and just watched it and watched it and watched it, to where now, you know, with other friends who have seen the movie a lot, you know, we just quote lines over and over, like, Harrisburg, passed it about an hour ago. So I do that with my friend Johnny. Even though I haven't seen him in a while, when we are together, we do that. And then, like, on Facebook, he'll put a quote in the movie and I'll have to quote back. And of course, I know the quote right away because I've seen the movie so much. Laundry Check 2. Hang on. So the laundry is in the dryer and I don't have enough change. So my clothes are going to be a little damp because I don't feel like breaking a 20, and there's no one at the laundromat to break a 20 because everybody left. It's a 24-hour laundromat, and I'm not breaking a 20 in the change machine. First world problems. So anyway, so before I start talking about Day of the Dead, I do want to point out that I remember I was at an acting gig from 2000 and 2007. I pursued acting full time. I say pursued acting full time because I wasn't a full time actor, but I was fortunate. To work a bunch. I just didn't make enough money to do as a living. So I bartended and temped and was every cliche and had survival jobs just to supplement my acting income. So anyway, I remember I was at a gig. I think it was a corporate gig, like an industrial. So if industrial means, like, yeah, I guess like corporate stuff. And it was, I think, for a training video for some security company about loss prevention. Nothing to do with the story, but anyway. So I remember we were in holding. We were waiting. Holding means we were waiting for the shoot to begin. And we were just, I was talking with the other actors, and I remember I was talking to an actress who I thought was really cute. So I trying to impress her with my knowledge of horror movies. So I remember talking about Dawn of the Dead and saying, you know, not only was, just what I was saying before, not only did the movie have action and had gore, but there was an important social message in the movie. And like the look on her face, she just started laughing to the point of almost crying, because thinking about what a ridiculous statement that this person just made, thinking, oh, it's just this, how can a zombie movie have a message like that? It's just a stupid zombie movie. It was very, very condescending. And I didn't show my anger, but I was like, on the inside, I'm like, oh, like, I don't like you. That's such a terrible thing to do. It's just so condescending. And she didn't even see the movie because I was telling her about it. So if you're going to criticize something, at least watch it, which is what I didn't do with the What the Health documentary. I was getting into arguments on a vegan message board because there was a vegan dietitian reviewing What the Health, saying that it's using shoddy science and it's using propaganda and it's using pseudoscience. So in my post, I said, I didn't see the movie, but I agree with what this person is saying about pseudoscience and propaganda. So I, of course, got the response, how can you even critique the movie if you haven't seen it? And then I explained, well, yes, I cannot talk about the movie, but I will talk about the statements that this vegan dietitian made. Holy tangent. Oh, it's late, and I just have to go home and make food, and I can't because I have to wait for laundry. Anyway, so Day of the Dead. When I first saw Day of the Dead, I must have been around 13 or 14, because I knew. I'm like, oh, this is the third movie in the Dead series. And I remember not liking it at first because there wasn't as much action as Dawn of the Dead. It started out really slow. There was just a lot of talking in it and not enough killing of zombies. It was more about experimenting on the zombies and gathering them. It wasn't, you know, the scientists didn't want to shoot the zombies in the head. They wanted to figure out how to defeat them scientifically, how to find out the cause and then take care of it that way. And I remember being so mad because I just wanted to see more zombies get killed like what happened in Dawn of the Dead. So that's what it was like as a kid. But then at the end of Day of the Dead, the amount of gore was so extreme and so disturbing. And the movie was made in 1985, and it still holds up today for many reasons, but especially effects-wise. It's one of the best makeup effects that I've ever seen in any movie, even by today's standards. Just an incredible piece of work by Tom Savini. He is a Vietnam War veteran, so he was a photographer in Vietnam, so he would just take pictures of real-life ghastly stuff. And I think he brought some of that to his work, but then he also would look at medical books for Day of the Dead and tried to make the effects medically accurate as well. So watching Day of the Dead as an adult, well, one, you see Greg Nicotero, a very young Greg Nicotero, who's now the executive producer, one of the producers and director and makeup artist of The Walking Dead. So that's how most people know him, but he had a very, very successful career as a makeup artist, and he was the protege of Tom Savini. And Tom Savini did effects for Dawn of the Dead as well. So you see a very young Greg Nicotero with a small part, and he has an infamous part where his head gets cut off and it's being operated by wires, and just a ghastly and great special effects scene. But looking at Day of the Dead as an adult, I appreciate it more, and I actually really like it. Well, first, let me say what I don't like about it, and this is a minor criticism, but I felt that there was a lot of overacting in it, like the... And I don't know if it's necessarily the actor's fault. It just might have been the tone of the movie as to where all the characters are isolated. They don't know what's going on. They're fighting amongst themselves, and it just gets more intense and more intense and more intense. So there's a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, a lot of laughing. So it seems like overacting, but I can understand why the actors did what they did, because they're definitely... to the point of what Sarah, the main character, says about different characters in the movie, collapsing. He's collapsing. So it was a bunch of people, especially in the military, slowly collapsing. And Romero continues with his roles for women by casting Lori Cardill. And Lori Cardill is the daughter of Bill Chilly Billy Cardill, who had a cameo in Night of the Living Dead playing himself, because he was like a horror host in Pennsylvania. So George Romero gave him a small role as a reporter. So great job by Lori Cardill, but she was the main character. And once again, she was a woman who took charge. The fact that she was a woman was brought up because she was the only woman left on the compound. So you got to see the tension, especially by the guys in the military making veiled threats at her, meaning she's the only woman there. And Captain Rhodes says, you know, maybe we can all go for some loving. So that tension is there. She is very much unsafe, not unlike women, what women face even today, whether it's in the workplace or just at a bar or walking out on the street. They're just facing constant harassment, or if not harassment, just the fear of harassment. And that's what Sarah was facing throughout the movie. So just another ahead of his time, great casting as a woman in the role, taking charge. This was before Aliens as well. This was after Alien, but before Sigourney Weaver took the reprised role in Ripley as Aliens, in Aliens. So, strong woman character. It definitely passed the Bechdel test, which is, the Bechdel test, there are supposed to be two women characters in it, but since Sarah's the only woman character, there weren't too many scenes where she was talking about a man. She did have a love interest in it, but they were on the verge of falling apart because the guy was just going crazy. He totally lost it, and she was the one trying to keep it together. So there were a couple of scenes where she was talking about a man. That's what the Bechdel test is. It's women characters talking about men, and if there are scenes in the movie that that have women or a woman not talking about a man or how to win a man or how to get back a man or a relationship with a man, it passes the test. And from what I remember, it's been a while since I've seen Day of the Dead. I believe it was passed with flying colors because Sarah was talking about just how to survive and how to approach the military with the differences that the science and the military had. So I think the social message in Day of the Dead, it's not entirely clear, but this was made in the 80s, where movies about the military started to be fetishized, meaning you had movies like Rambo, you had movies like Top Gun, you had movies like Missing in Action, where it showed the American hero killing everybody. You had all the Schwarzenegger movies, even though he's not American, he was for the American military, killing all the bad guys and saving all the day. One guy doing everything, taking charge. Everybody's dead because we're America. Rah, rah, sis, kumbah. We're number one, USA, USA. So this might have been Romero's response to that in the mid-80s. So it was a group of people in the army against a group of scientists, and they're trying to figure out who has the actual authority and what to do with that authority. So it's just a constant tension between science and between the army. And I think Romero is once again ahead of his time, because when you have scientists trying to do their work and people are interfering, it's kind of like what's happening today. Except that the scientists in this movie, they really couldn't experiment that well because they had such limited resources, but they were trying. They were trying, at least in a civil manner, to get the job done, but there was one scientist who went a little off the rails, Dr. Frankenstein, they called him, Dr. Logan, and he started experimenting too much and took too much delight in it, and he seemed to be sadistic in his experiments. His experiments went too far because he used the army soldiers in his experiments, and that created a bunch of conflict between the army and the science and the scientists until everything just went haywire and the real gore began. And again, Romero, with casting of minorities, he cast a black man in one of the main roles and showed him as not a servant, not a gang member, but as a hero in the movie, as a guy, of course, who is flawed. All the characters are flawed. That's what makes even the good characters great. You see the flaws in them. But it showed how he had a great arc. And I'm forgetting the guy's name right now, the actor's name and the character's name. But he had a great arc. And you know, all the characters are good. Like I said, even though some of the army guys were shouting too much and there was a lot of screaming, there was definitely a human quality to Day of the Dead that makes it timeless. I remember watching this as a kid at my friend Mike Savino's house. And Mike Savino is now in a band called Tall Tall Trees. He's touring the world. He's always on the road. He also plays banjo for a guy named Kishibashi. And he makes a living as a musician. So I remember as kids going to his place and watching Day of the Dead. But his mom didn't like movies with cursing in it. So I remember we were watching the movie. We must have been like, I don't know, God, 10, 11, or something like that. Yeah, like sixth grade. And so like 10 or 11. And we were watching Day of the Dead, but every time there was a curse, the mom would, like, her ears would prick up and go, what was that? Was that cursing? So when we watched Day of the Dead together, we weren't paying attention to the movie. We were paying attention to the fact of when the characters cursed every time, which was quite often. There were so many curses in Day of the Dead, and that's how I remember it, because Mike Savino's mom, we didn't want to get in trouble from his mom. So, and then what Day of the Dead also did, it also humanized the zombie. It made a zombie start to remember and have human qualities. And there was an evolution to the zombies that you didn't see in Night of the Living Dead. You didn't see in Dawn. You saw in Day. And then when Romero did Land of the Dead, it brought that even further because it showed zombies starting to get more and more intelligent. Land of the Dead was not bad. It was Romero's chance at a pretty slick, pretty good budgeted movie. There were some strong parts. The social message was excellent. It was subtle, but that's why it was so strong, because it was subtle. It was about the separation of classes, especially in post 9/11 world. So the rich lived in the cities and the poor lived in the slums, trying to scrounge for whatever they can, and it's just the division of classes and corporations taking over and the power of the rich over the power of the poor. So I thought Romero did that well. The movie itself was okay. I haven't seen it in a while. I thought it could have been better from the last time I saw it. I remember watching it going, like, really wanting to like it, and I came out thinking it was okay. And then he did, after that was Diary of the Dead, which was horrible. I remember I saw that in the movie theater, and I just, the social message in the movie was actually really good, and it corresponded with the times. It was about the internet age, and again, this is a timeless appeal to it, especially now. It's about the age of the internet and how everybody wants to be on TV, how everybody wants a video, it wants to be a video star, a reality TV star without actually having to put the work in. But the execution wasn't that good of the message, and the message wasn't subtle. We were just hit over the head with it over and over and over again, where I was like, okay, I get it. This is what you're trying to do. And it was more about telling and not showing. So the characters would literally say, oh, you just want to be on TV. That's how you do things, or something like that. And I only saw it once because I was so disappointed in it. I didn't like Diary of the Dead at all. Then Island of the Dead came out. And the movie itself was all right. It was kind of like, it brought us back to like a Hatfield versus the McCoys kind of thing. It was almost like a Western. I saw it once, but what I didn't like about it was that it was shot on a low budget and the effects were very, very digital. They just looked so phony, and it took me out of the movie. But the movie itself wasn't that bad. And then other Romero movies, you know, Creepshow really stands out. Creepshow was a lot of fun. I think he did Creepshow too, I'm not so sure. There was a remake of Night of the Living Dead, which I thought was solid. In this version, the Barbara character was a much stronger woman. And there was rumors that even though Tom Savini got directing credit, that there was some trouble on the set and Romero really directed the movie, but I'm not too sure about that. It was just rumors. Romero did another movie that I really liked as a kid called Monkey Shines. And I remember before the movie came out, I was so excited because it was the first time I was going to experience a new Romero movie that actually I was waiting for to come out in the theaters, because before that time, I was, you know, everything was available on video, on home video, back when there was home video. And I remember being so excited, and when Newsday, the paper on Long Island that I grew up reading, gave it a 2.5-star review, I was kind of excited because it wasn't a bad review. I'm like, oh my God, they liked it. And I cut out the advertisement of the movie, and I hung it on my wall. And I don't remember if I saw it in the movie theater or had to wait for it to come on video, but I remember loving it as a kid in junior high. I haven't seen it in a while, and I'm curious if I would like it now. It just seemed kind of ridiculous that a guy would have, you know, a psychic connection to a monkey based on the monkey being injected with human brain cells. It was just kind of a jump. But it featured Jason Begay, who's still working now, and it featured John Pankow, who has been working. He was in Mad About You, and he's been working, and Stanley Tucci, younger Stanley Tucci was in it as well. So, and Romero worked with Ed Harris a lot too. He worked with him in Knight Riders. He worked with him in Creepshow. So, and it's great to see Ed Harris and just the astonishing career that he's had. And Romero kind of, you know, the beginning of Harris's career was, you know, was with Romero. Like, before he did The Right Stuff, he did Romero movies. So, but yeah, the Dead movies are the ones that I'm most familiar with, but I wish Romero was able to get something off the ground in recent times, especially with the success of Walking Dead. It was like, you know, I always wish that, you know, maybe Robert Kirkman can just throw him a couple of $1 million and have him do any kind of movie he wanted. There was, you know, rumors that he had a comic book called Empire of the Dead, which I read one issue and I thought it was okay. But, and then he wanted to do a movie called Road of the Dead, which, you know, sounds cool. But I just don't understand why a guy like him couldn't work. And I guess maybe because his later movies weren't as strong. But I would just hope, just for legend status, you know, somebody can give him something and just have him just have him work his magic without anybody being in his way. So yeah, it sucks. It sucks that he's gone. And 77 is way too young. So please, everybody, don't smoke cigarettes. You know, I know, you know, I'm sure when Romero was a young man, you probably thought cigarettes were good for you, but he just kept smoking and it just does a lot of damage. That's my public service announcement. This will be one of at least another podcast about Romero. I want to get my friend Glenn Baisley on the podcast. Glenn is an independent, I guess he's still an independent filmmaker. I acted in a lot of movies that Glenn did, and I'm sure once he has the means to do so, he'll start making more movies. But Glenn is a very big fan of Romero, and I would love to have a conversation with Glenn about the impact that Romero had on him and what Romero means to him, because Romero certainly means a lot to me, and I will delight in showing people his movies who haven't seen them before, which I've done. I've done a few times, and, you know, the movies have gotten good reviews. And so I hope to show more people in the future, and I hope that you learn some things about his movies, and I hope it maybe in this podcast inspires you to watch the movies again. If you didn't see the movies, you've been spoiled a lot, so it would suck to watch it, even though it was spoiled. But you know what? Even though with the spoiling, they're still really damn good, you know. It's just one of those movies I pick something up every time I watch it. But Romero came up with, you know, the modern day zombie movie. There would not be Walking Dead, literally would not be Walking Dead if it wasn't for him, because The Walking Dead is greatly influenced by Romero, and Robert Kirkman would tell you that as well. I find slow zombies less scary than fast zombies, because fast zombies can catch up to you. Like, the zombies in Return of the Living Dead were fast, and you couldn't even kill them with anything. It made them extra scary. But what I like about slow zombies more than I like about fast zombies, and same thing with the zombies in 28 Days, but they weren't zombies, it was like a rage virus or whatever, zombie-like. And the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which I wasn't a fan of, had the fast zombies. What I like about slow zombies is the plausibility, even though you're trying to make plausibility to something that's implausible. You know, it's a dead body. How can dead bodies move fast? I know they can't move at all, but, you know, still. You figured dead would move slow. But slow zombies gave you the false sense of security, because you look and go, I can outrun these things. They're so slow. I'm going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. They don't have any leverage. They're weak. I can take them. But the thing with zombies, and I think I give credit to Max Brooks for pointing this out, is that zombies don't get tired. People do. So even though they're moving slow, eventually they'll catch up to you. And if there's enough zombies in a herd, to use the language in The Walking Dead, they're going to be stronger than you. So if you have even a bunch of weak beings against one strong human that gets tired, the human eventually will lose. So it's that false sense of security that makes it a lot cooler, even though it may not be as scary. But still, with the social message and just the way the films were directed and the writing and the pacing and just the characters and the acting and all that, they're some of my favorite movies, and I recommend them to anyone. So so rest in peace, Mr. Romero, even though, you know, I'm an atheist, so I think dead is dead. I don't think he's going to be coming back, and I don't think he's in a heaven somewhere. But, you know, his movies will live on, and that's what we have regarding immortality. That's the closest thing to immortality we can get, at least right now, is that our work, our art, memories of us will live on through our art, even when everybody who has ever known us has died. We still live on in our art. So I hope to live on in my art even a fraction of the way Romero did, and I hope you enjoyed listening to my art. And I do consider this an art, believe it or not. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Mike Lane Act. That's MikeLaneAct. I'm on Facebook at Mike Lane Actor. Where else am I? And you can email me at MikeLaneAct@yahoo.com. All right, everyone. Have a good one. Bye.